the same. I never weep at night. I call your name. Ow! Don't you know I can't take it?
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien, and boy, do we have a show for you today. These days, there's a growing constellation of intractable crises. Authoritarianism, both in America and abroad, climate change, economic inequality, social upheaval, and spiritual malaise. It can be hard to find hope, let alone joy, during this global dark night. Today, our conversation explores the dangers in our world right now and how to transform in the face of a global crisis. We will explore our guest's remarkable must-read manifesto for benefiting from the dark night of the soul and the birth of the new human. Our guest today is Andrew Harvey, author of 42 books, including his newest one at this time, Radical Regeneration, Sacred Activism and the Renewal of the World, which he co-wrote with Dr. Carolyn Baker. Andrew is an internationally renowned religious scholar, writer, and spiritual teacher. The founder and director of the Institute for Sacred Activism. He lives in Chicago, Illinois. Hello, Andrew, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Glad to be with you.
Okay, so now both you and your co-author have been accused of being darkness junkies. Why is that? Give us a little backdrop here.
In a world of fugitives, someone taking the opposite direction will be always said to be running away. In a world in denial, somebody who tells the truth, not to sell darkness, but to enable people to get through an extremely difficult situation, tells that truth to people who are in denial will be said to be doomwallers and prophets of desolation. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Okay. Well, you know, it's a scary book in some ways. It's as if it's asking the reader, are you ready for intensely frightening dark night of the soul and initiation? Are you ready to go through it? Because the
I'm saying that because that's what's happening. So if you're not ready for it, it's not going to be able to transform you in the way that it's intended to do. So get ready. Stop denying. See the truth of this devastating dark night exploding in everything around you. Read the book and realize that this has a deep sacred meaning, which the great mystics of evolution have always known.
Well, you know, the implicit question for the reader, including me, is can you handle it? You know, it's like so frightening when you break it down. And I think that's the question, isn't it? Do you think most of your readers are capable of the kind of mystical transfiguration that you're espousing?
I've been capable of it. Anybody is capable of it because I have all the faults and crazinesses and inhibitions and stupidities in my own psyche, heart, mind, and body, as everybody else does. And I know that I'm in the beginnings of the beginning of a transfiguration process. I had a teacher who was in the process of the transfiguration and gave me the essential wisdom to pursue it. So I know from my own inmost experience that a birth of a new kind of human being is taking place. It's taking place all over the world. I meet hundreds, if not thousands of people who are undergoing this immense experience. Look at the epidemic of Kundalini everywhere. People in the middle of God knows where having massive Kundalini experiences being erupted into this dimension of birth that's arising simultaneously with this great death. So, and when you ask that question, let me answer that question, and then I'd love to ask you to ask a question, because this is really important. You asked an incredibly important question. You asked, can we handle this? It's not a question of can we handle this. We have to handle this. And in order to be able to handle this, we have all of us, including myself, got to do a lot more relentless inner prayer, inner meditation, inner mystical practice, to be given as wide a perspective on this as we can possibly be given, and to be given ourselves the kind of spiritual strength that it's going to take to be with a world rent apart by death to give birth to a new humanity. It's going to be unspeakable. It is already, but we are up to it, but only if we do the work. There is no other way at this moment, and it's a wonderful way and a glorious way.
And so, what about people who feel like, they've got to take care of their family, they've got to make a living, how do they achieve the kind of mystical evolutionary development that is called for, given the
They
exigencies
are the
of
ones
daily life?
most suitable for this transformation because they live in the real world. So, for instance, if you're in a family, if you're a family person, you have children, you want to protect your children. How will you protect your children if they have no world to be children in? Get real. And don't abandon your job, but realize your prime function is to become awake so that you can guide your children. And to become awake is very much simpler than people normally understand, because the Boys Club has made it all so complicated. It isn't complicated.
But you
It
say
really
in the
requires
book,
three things.
you say extinction, including human extinction, is virtually certain. So it's that, how can
I don't say virtue. Do I say exactly that? Because I think what we're saying is it's absolutely possible. It's not certain. It's definitely possible. And it could, by all the facts, happen. But there are other things beside the facts that are in play.
Well, you say, I'll quote, ultimately, no human survival is po we are well aware of the likelihood of human extinction. In fact, we've both written about it. We are also aware of individuals who focus almost exclusively on it, declaring that
Right.
ultimately no human survival is possible. Okay, so you that's not your
Likely is very different from certain. And if I was certain that humans were going to be extinguished, I wouldn't be pouring out every second of my ancient days to try and give people the vision of radical regeneration, because I know that while it's likely, it's not certain.
Okay.
And it can be made a lot less certain if a lot more of us wake up and start putting love into action and sacred activism all over the planet to change the structures that are engendering a humanity that is crazy and destructive.
Let's talk about radical regeneration. How would you describe humanity's next evolutionary stage?
That's the billion-dollar question. I think what's so extraordinary is the knowledge that comes to you when you plunge into the real mystical systems, as I've had the privilege of doing. And the two kinds of interlinked knowledge that really do change your whole understanding of what human beings can be. First of all, the knowledge that all the mystical traditions have of the terrible, cruel, ferocious process known as the Dark Night. And the second is the knowledge that they all also have, in their different ways of expressing it, of the kind of being, the new divine human being that is born out of that dark night process. Very simply, the dark night is known as the stage in which the last remnants of the human ego are annihilated, so that the inherent divine consciousness, that is a blessing from the divine that lives in us as us, can be released. And this process is known in the shamanic traditions, in Kabbalah, in Shaivism, in Hinduism, in Buddhism, everywhere, and especially, of course, in Christianity and Islam. What happens through that annihilation of the false self and the emergence of the real self is that another amazing transformation starts to take place, because The birth of the self is not just a birth of a new kind of divine consciousness that sees the divine in and as everything, not just the birth of a new heart that is one with the heart of the pulsing universe, the created and constantly recreated universe. It's also a completely different body that starts to become evolved because the light is streaming down and in, and the matter, which is also secretly crystallized light, is being opened and transformed by that irrigation by the light, and a new kind of human being is born. Christ, Buddha, the prophet, the great, great human beings who are consciously also divine beings. So what is the next stage of human evolution? I think it's very clear. I think what is very clear is that the divine has ordained that this new race will be born. It knows the process. It has allowed a global dark night to be engendered in its full unspeakable horror so that the last remnants of the false human self can be annihilated. But that annihilation will not necessarily mean the end of the race. It will be the end of a whole way of being and doing everything. And through that, the birth in the race of another level of divine empowerment of the mind to discover all kinds of new solutions, divine empowerment of the heart to embrace every living being and institute structures that celebrate the unity of life, and in the transfiguration of the body to become much stronger and much more tenderly sensitive to divine energy. That's the next step.
You know, I think most of us, and I include myself in this, feel kind of despairing about our capacity to become another Jesus or another Buddha or an enlightened being that's basically transcended the ego while still operating as we need to in the world, subject, object, etc. How do you avoid despair, you know, given this, what you call the self-hatred of patriarchy, which totally makes sense to me, and the, you know, and how our industrial civilization is so ego-driven, and it's all about, you know, separate acquisition and competition and greed. How do we have hope? Where do we find hope? Because most people's understanding of religion is not really supporting them evolving into any kind of mystical self-realization.
Well, there you've answered the question. Is the only answer is a very radical one. It's to say to everybody, honestly, scrap religion, go for the mystical connection directly with the divine as deeply and simply and humbly as you can. The divine will give you that connection if you ask for it. And when you do very simply, and there's such simple practices that you can do that will help you so much, such as saying the name of God by whatever name you love God or the source or spirit or whatever the hell or heaven you call it, and offering yourself up humbly for revelation, you'll find that that will work.
How important is it to have a guru? I know you had a guru and you wrote a book about it. How important do you think
it is?
Yeah, but
I left the guru.
Yeah, no, I know. And we don't have time to talk about that, although that's a fascinating story. Maybe we can
Think you need a guru. I think you need yourself as an inner guru through awakening the new consciousness through simple mystical practice in yourself and then listening to what you tell yourself.
Well, you have to learn these practices from somebody.
Yes, but they can be taught by anybody who really loves them and has benefited from them.
Okay. And what about hope? Give us your concept of hope. And you have a concept that you write about in your book called active hope.
Well, hope is not just a noun. It's a verb. I don't believe anybody who says they have hope when they're not actually doing anything to make that hope real. Why would I? Why would you? So I'm not an optimist and I'm not a pessimist. I'm not an optimist because optimists tend to say, oh, well, I hope that everything is going to be okay while not doing a damn thing to make that hope real. And pessimists are saying, it's all over, it's pointless, I'm in despair, how could anybody not be in despair at everything that's going on? And they, by their defeatism and their passivity, are allowing things to get worse and worse and worse while claiming to be deeply intelligent and illumined by the truth of reality. They're wrong too. The only possible position that an awake person can take is one of realism. And that realism is not taught only by what happens, it's taught by the real, the truth, the one that illumines you and shows you that if you want to hope, you had better start trying to become a living embodiment of hope. Someone who has deep experiences of unity with the whole of creation and realizes that those experiences are saying to them, what the hell are you going to do to preserve me?
Okay, so what should I do? You know, sort of like, I have this sense that these problems are so huge, like climate change, for instance. What the hell can I do? I mean, I'm recycling, you know, I'm careful not to waste things. I have an electric car, you know, but what
You're
more
doing than something.
Yeah, I'm doing something.
Well, I think you're doing what you're meant to be doing, and that you're offering your own time and your wisdom to help bring some rich mystical teachings to the world. That's sacred service, and you do it out of great love and out of heartbreak at the lack of wisdom in the world.
Right.
That's why I don't think you need to my reply to tell you what to do. You're doing it. This is it. You're manifesting it. Draw hope from being a beacon of hope.
It doesn't seem like enough, though. You know, it's like I just kind of feel hopeless in terms of having much of an impact.
I think I've shared that despair many times, but I think that comes from a lack of final trust in the truth itself. I think, and also in my case, it came from a kind of inflation. I thought at one time that I was here especially to save the planet. I mean, everybody has this fantasy, and that is a fantasy of the ego and not of the really balanced self. So I think part of my despair came from not feeling that I wasn't saving the world as I was supposed to do. And then I suddenly woke up to the fact that I could save the world. Nobody can save the world. We can all wake up, and together we can transform ourselves and transform the world. But that's a very different thing.
So I
trust the truth.
Okay. Sounds like a pretty important thing to do, to trust life, you know, because as you say somewhere in your book, it's how we've kind of lost confidence and lost faith in humanity. And, you know, you're talking about the negative effects of fascism, and one of them is to lose faith in humanity. Well, I'm not a fascist, but I don't have a whole lot of faith in humanity when I look at the news and, you know, try to stay informed.
Did you see last week something that could have given you unbelievable hope? Did you see what those Tennessee bastards tried to do to those two splendid, amazing young black men who were standing up for true gun laws in the basis of the in the very bowels of the Tennessee chamber? They threw them out, but the young men didn't despair. They came together. They gave their message to the whole of America and the world. And there are now thousands of young people peacefully protesting, rediscovering their power as citizens. That's hope.
Yeah, no, that was good. Yeah, that's.
And it's everywhere if you look. If you develop birth eyes, which is one of the things that I hope this book, Radical Regeneration, will help you develop, you will see these amazing movements of hope everywhere. Look at the whole Trump thing. On the one hand, you can swivel your head in absolutely atrocious despair at the depths and fabulous lengths of the criminality of that man and how horrifying and contaminating his disgusting psychopathic presence has been. You can say that. But if you look at it from another perspective and realize that now the indictment has happened and all kinds of scandals in all aspects of the formation of fascism are coming to light in Fox News and in all the other domains imaginable in the Supreme Court, you're seeing that the dark black fish of fascism is being systematically gutted by divine grace to reveal all of its horror, to give us all a chance to Stop being in denial, see how dangerous these forces are, and do the inner work to rise power and passion and love and joy in ourselves, and then get together and use this terrific orgy of evil to commit ourselves to the good and go forward.
You know, one of the things that came through to me from your book was how important it is to develop some tolerance for ambiguity and for uncertainty.
Yes.
You know, because we want life to have meaning. I've been asking the question, what's the meaning of life, my whole life? And Eckhart Tolle, as you point out in your book, described the dark night of the soul as a collapsed in perceived meaning, or the meaning that you've given your life somehow collapses.
Yes.
And then you write in the book, never has the meaning of life seemed such an urgent quest. And that is just it's how we deal with what we don't understand. It's like we demand certainty, but we live in a world of uncertainty. Can you speak to that?
Well, uncertainty is the absolute nature of our experience. Buddha got it right when he said everything is impermanent. But as you grow in mystical awareness, as you grow in spiritual awareness, you come to understand that you do know nothing. And that is a tremendous liberation. Because if you rest in that deep, humble unknowing, astonishing forms of knowledge will be flashed into your open and receptive brain. That's what the mystics of all of the traditions know. And if you cultivate that kind of unknowing knowing, there's no limits to what you can possibly know. So our lust for certainty is a lust for certainty in the wrong dimension. It can never work in the dimension of impermanence.
That's an ego trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But there are certainties that can be given. When you give up the certainties of the ego, then the certainties of the self start to arise and they change everything because they're not yours. They're of the very nature of the universe and of the divine human relationship.
Well, you know, we're undergoing an epidemic. This is what I hear from all of the, we've had many therapists on the show and spiritual teachers, et cetera, over the past 4 decades. And, you know, these days we hear there's this epidemic of depression and anxiety.
Right.
And what you're recommending and prescribing in your book is that we need, in order to recognize the madness, we need to, quote, befriend the dark emotions and to open our hearts to our grief, anger, fear, and despair. Well, you know, that's a tall order for most people who have, you know, are just
well,
trying.
That's not what I recommended, and Carolyn and I recommended first, actually. What we first recommended in the whole book, which is the second book, which actually was written the first, was called Return to Joy. We recommend that if you're going to meet the challenge of this time, we all cultivate joy at the deepest and richest and sweetest and simplest levels very much more intensely than we ever have before, so as to get acquainted with joy as the nature of the universe and draw great strength and hope from that. Then it's essential to, from that joy, from that knowledge that you are connected to the great joy creative force that is manifesting the whole universe, then you can turn to look and at your dark emotions and befriend them from a larger self, a more spacious self, a self that is calm and filled with energy. And when you do that, you heal them progressively and you integrate their knowledge and their wisdom into your whole being. That is the way that we're prescribing. Don't turn and look at all of that despair without being in a state of peace and joy through practice, because it will destroy you, especially as it's going to get a lot worse.
Well, where does grief come in? Grief is pretty important, right? We have to go through the grieving process of what we've lost. You know, these fantasies of self-aggrandizement, these fantasies of success, fantasies of comfort, fantasies of abundance. You know, we need to grieve the loss of all of that, because those are false illusions.
Yes. But that grieving is a cleansing, it's a purification, it's a making of your vessel ready for something much more amazing than anything that you have ever lost.
Right.
Making yourself available to your new self,
yeah,
which is all abundance.
You know, most of us are have been subjugated by patriarchal religion, which, as you point out, has trained us in depressive self-consciousness, sin and limitation, hatred of sexuality, and profound suspicion of the natural world.
I know. Can you imagine the job they've done on us? But it's not irremediable.
Right. Well, thank you for writing the book and kind of proving that point. There's so many things in here that we could go on, like the qualities of a wise elder. Wow, that's great stuff. And
thank you.
I've been talking to my friends at Brighton Bush and other holistic centers about how we need to be teaching wise elderhood. You know, that can be the emphasis going forward.
As elders, we must all grow wise together and make some radioactive good trouble together. That we're really quite good at it. Don't let's sit around despairing. Let's get going and galvanize the young and give them everything we know, because they're the ones who are going to go through it and they will need what we have, and they love us. The crazy ones amongst them love the crazy ones amongst us.
It's a beautiful vision. And I want to thank you for being on the show. And before we go, there's so much more that we could talk about. I your book is amazing.
This is a 5-year labor. We've done a manifesto for the new world as far as we can with our limitations. This is a massive book, and it took every ounce of strength and 40 years experience to be able to offer this map at this time. But if you go through this book, you won't end in despair. You'll end with tools and maps and practices and reoriented visions, which will give you strength and joy and, yes, hope. Because instead of having hope, you'll be tempted to become hope, and then you'll be filled with more hope.
Thank you, Andrew. There's so much more that we could explore, but we've run out of time. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners today about your website, which is simply andrewharvey.net. And people can go there and they can find how to get the book. The book's on Amazon, and they can learn about your work in general. But so thanks again for being on the show.
My great joy. Thank you, all of you.
Now, for those who may have tuned in to Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural transformation. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Andrew Harvey, author of Radical Regeneration, Sacred Activism, and the Renewal of the World. Highly recommend it. You'll never have read a book like this, I guarantee you that. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. And even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's divination.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Andrew Harvey and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture. Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KBOO every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian.
And eventually, they'll go insane.
You never know what you will find on your radio / interwebs during the show, but it will be something.
They'll go insane. And eventually...
That's the Vinyl Pajama Party, alternating Tuesdays at 3 a.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.